This morning, I'm going to continue with the theme of Sims this month regarding boundaries. And last week, Lyndall started us out and talked about boundaries. And yeah, talking about how there's a bit of a question, how you reconcile the fact that we're trying to connect and not having boundaries. On the other hand, seeing the boundaries are important. What type of boundaries are helpful in regard to one another, in regard to what we relate to. So this morning, I'm going to be talking about, narrow that theme a little bit and talk about boundaries in regard to sila and generosity. And just as a way of framing things, a way of starting out, I just want to acknowledge where I'm coming from. You know, I'm a cis male, white, privileged. I really haven't experienced trauma of any great degree in my life. I have been economically secure. And so my perspectives are, and what I'm saying today, are going to be through that lens. And as you listen to me, as I, give this talk, I think it's helpful that each one of us consider, where are we coming from? I had a discussion with a couple of women friends yesterday, and, talking about, well, if I say hi to a guy on the street, it's not a problem. But when they do, they have to be a little bit more cautious in regard to what do they open themselves up to. So based on our own personal conditioning throughout life, each of us need to keep in mind what are boundaries that are appropriate for ourselves. And especially in regard to genders, our economic privileges, our race, skin color, and whether we've had trauma in our life. I think people who have had trauma, physical, mental abuse, they need to consider the boundaries differently than I would. So I'm going to start out with that and also kind of say again how Lyndall started out. This sense in our practice in that we're all connected. That's kind of where we're going. We're interdependent. And I like reflecting on something that Carl Sagan has said. Back in, I think it was the mid-90s, 1990s, there was a two-space explorer, two-space, what do you call it, shuttles, satellites, what do you call that one name? Things, explorers. Anyway, the Voyager 1 and 2, exploration of the outer planets. And as they left the outer planets, Carl Sagan, who was involved in this whole project, asked them to turn the camera back on the Earth and took a picture of the Earth from way out in the outer planets. And the Earth appeared as just a pale blue dot in this field of dots. It could hardly be seen. And Carl Sagan said, look at that dot. That's our home. That's here. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being, whoever was, lived out their lives. Every saint and sinner in the history of our species, every superstar, supreme leader, teacher of morals, corrupt politicians, lived there. On a mote of dust, suspended in a sunbeam. So it can be readily seen. We're clearly more connected than disconnected. Uh, So the Buddhist perspective, and then you add to that, the Buddhist perspective about not self, anatta, talking about our interconnectedness. And so how does that reconcile? And I kind of took that. That's kind of how I've seen my practice is how do I break down boundaries? How do I open up? And I was surprised that as a retreat one time with Ajahn Suchito, a really excellent teacher, very experienced. He said that if you don't have boundaries, people are going to trample all over you. I was shocked. Whoa, that's coming from a monk. I was talking about breaking down boundaries, but that's what he said. And it's true. It's true. So we have this paradox. On one hand, our practice is one of opening up, letting go. On the other hand, our practice, it's important to say no, to have boundaries, to protect ourselves. So there's value and need for boundaries. And I remember, oh, it was back when a friend of mine gave me a simile, told me a simile about boundaries. He talked about the guardrails on a highway. And so imagine, if you have the Aurora Bridge, going over the Aurora Bridge, I'm able to go 40 miles an hour over that Aurora Bridge, many cars going both directions. I never feel comfortable doing it. I mean, the roadway is kind of narrow, so it feels a little bit scary, a little bit. I got to be cautious. But imagine what that bridge would be like if there weren't guardrails. No guardrails on either side. It was just flat highway. I think I would have a hard time even walking across that bridge. It would be, intimidating. So boundaries create a certain freedom. It creates a certain protection. It helps keep us safe. And we have all kinds of boundaries, and maybe, just around traffic. We have boundaries around this is my house, that's your house. It's important to know this is my family, that's your family. It's important to know. Perhaps we go a little bit too far in our culture about ownership and protection of that space, but regardless, it can serve a purpose. Sometimes that boundaries serve the purpose of the common good, and perhaps sometimes that boundaries serve the purposes of those in power and those who set the boundaries. Worth noting and worth considering and worth relating to boundaries in a way that's going to be considering them for how can they be helpful for us and others. So boundaries can have a different bases. They can be based on ethics, personal gain, material or spiritual guidelines. We say, we can have boundaries saying, I want to be a good worker. I want to be nice. I want to be liked. I'm going to do anything I can to be popular or attractive. We can have boundaries around our intellectual activities, what we let in, what we don't let in, the devices, our news feed. All those can have boundaries. I sometimes hear people, when you talk about boundaries and kind of guidelines, especially like when our mindfulness practice and what we do on this path. And I hear some people say, oh, I just want to be spontaneous. I just want to be able to act freely. Just want to, just have that type of freedom. And I think there's something worth saying about that. Just kind of be free to act. And as I worked on this talk, I thought about that a little bit more. And having boundaries in this practice is an intention to not be completely spontaneous, but rather to be mindful. If we're completely spontaneous, essentially what that means is that we're just acting out of our conditioning. We're just allowing our conditioning to just spurt forth. And as Lyndall was saying last week, you know, some of that conditioning isn't helpful. Some is, some isn't. But it's worth being mindful of what is and isn't. So even though it might not be completely spontaneous, at least it can be helpful. So we set boundaries. And we set boundaries around eating and drinking, about news and device time, about meditating. We set boundaries around anticipation of a familiar situation, of visiting a family. Setting boundaries is helpful. Recognizing boundaries which are not helpful are worth letting go of. So I'll just jump in here now about our practice. What are our helpful boundaries? And the framing, one framing that we can have is having boundaries around sila, ethical behavior, virtue. There's different ways of the precepts, morality. There's different ways of talking about this. I like the word sila because some of the other words like ethics and morality, it can kind of have a bit of a, can be loaded. We can have a little bit of reactivity around it. But the sila is a little bit more of kind of a warm-heartedness, a caring about one another. And in terms of setting boundaries in this practice, you start with wise intention. It's part of the Eightfold Path, wise view and wise intention. And one way to summarize wise intention would be saying we act for my welfare, welfare of others, and leading to peace. And this is definite. This is kind of the guiding principle. Seeing the world through that lens. This is what we can hang our hat on. Having an intention like this creates the boundary between an intention and action rather than a boundary between self and other. And I thought that's important. Let me say that again. Setting it up with this type of intention is that it creates a boundary between intention and action rather than between me and you, self and other. So actions become deliberate, aligned with that intention. It's something that we can hang our hat on. It's a bucket that holds water. It's not a bucket that leaks. This is where we stand. And with that, coming from that intention, that basically resolves the paradox of this path. You know, the view from outer space in which we're all connected, the anatta on the one hand, and the view of the valley of boundaries. So with this intention, the boundaries are the support for the path we're on. So we're clear on the boundaries, we're clear on the path. So it's important to know what path are we on. Consider, what is our path? And we can all have a different path. We can have, be on the path of becoming a doctor, becoming a politician, raising a family. I want to become rich and famous. We can have a path of just eat, drink, and be merry. I have a friend who is a self-proclaimed hedonist, yeah, seeking pleasure, avoiding discomfort. So it's important to choose our path. And this intention for my welfare, welfare others, gets to be the path. So there's nothing wrong, yeah, certainly, I was having intentions, these life intentions of raising a family and becoming a doctor, a musician, or a politician. But we can have a hierarchy of intentions. And if sila, having or not having sila as the uppermost intention, changes everything. It changes everything. You can imagine, a politician. What's the uppermost intention? Sila or not? Doctor, sila or not? Whatever we're doing, the top tier are our intentions, and that top boundary creates a whole different lifestyle and way of relating to one another. Having this intention creates what Ajahn Suchito calls a boundary of attention. It's a frame of reference. It's the lens. It's a boundary of attention, meaning as we look at life in consideration of for my welfare and welfare of others, that's how action is going to follow. If we're seeking out fame and fortune, that's our frame of reference. That's about our boundary of attention. That's how actions follow. Even the small things. If I'm getting ready to go out work in the garden, actions follow that intention. I gather tools, I get dressed, and I move along lines of that intention. So intention is key. And so this having or not having sila as the uppermost intention, this boundary of tension, like I say, changes everything. It recognizes or ignores the view of Earth from space or our interconnectedness. If our intentions aren't along those lines, let's say if without that intention, as we go through life, we have material comforts and there's impermanence. We lose our comforts. We lose relationships. Relationships end. There's sickness, aging, and death as a part of life. If our intention, if our frame of reference has to do with gathering stuff, relationships, if that's the top tier of intention, then when those things change and disappear, when there's sickness, aging, and death, we no longer have a place to hang our hats. We lose our refuge. If sila is our top tier intention, we can lose everything. We can lose friends. We can lose our belongings. Everything can be washed away in the floods. We still have sila as our top refuge. So in particular, sila, one aspect of sila are the precepts. And I imagine most of you have heard or know the precepts. And they are boundaries. They are boundaries of no, boundaries of saying no, boundaries of refraining from. And that's how it's phrased. These are things I refrain from. And I'll go through this briefly. So, refraining from killing or causing physical harm. Refraining from taking what is not freely offered. Inspecting each other's property. Refraining from using our sexual energy in ways that cause harm. Why? Just watch the evening news. The pain and suffering that that causes. And don't even have to go that far. We have our own experiences in that regard. refraining from false or harmful speech. And this again, a Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Path, right speech is part of it. Wise speech, avoiding gossip and lies, knowing when to say something, when not to say something, knowing whether it's true or not, knowing whether it's causing harm, refraining from speech that causes harm. And then the fifth is refraining from taking intoxicants or substances that are going to cloud our minds. And in some way, this is the most important, because with clarity, some of the other things, some of the other precepts are going to be relatively known what to do and what not to do if we have that attention. The clouding of our minds, one way or another, is going to lead to our waffling, or not being clear on following the precepts. So the nice thing about, just doing this much, can you imagine a world where people just did that much? Just follow the precepts? Just 50% of the world. This is what I do. I don't cause harm. I don't take. I, respect one another, verbally, sexually, physically. 20%. It would really change what this world looks like. The nice thing about this is that with the precepts, no one needs to fear us. No one needs to fear me. And we have no reason to regret. And there's peace that comes with that. There's self-respect that comes with that. And the nice thing about having this boundary of this intention of not causing harm, acting in regard to peace, it creates a simplicity of decision-making. Makes decision making easy. This is what I do. This is what I'm in line with. In this circumstance, I know the direction I need to go. It might not be an easy decision. It might be counterintuitive. Spontaneously, we might do something completely unaligned with this. But consistency of alignment, regardless of the difficulty, ultimately creates an easier, more peaceful life for oneself and others. Now, it's not easy. There are circumstances that it's not clear what to do, how to do, what makes sense here. What are my intentions? So, in regard to aligning with these boundaries, other aspects of this practice are important. Discernment, mindfulness, noticing what's going on. What is my motivation here? What is helpful here? Well, I did that last time. Well, what makes sense this time? Now, this time it didn't work. I'm going to try a different thing this time. Last time I went this way, and this time I'm not. So it's renunciation comes into play. Now resolve. This is what I do. Now there's a danger there. There's a danger, a certain danger in saying this is what I do. It becomes a danger if it gets to be something that, this is who I am. This is how everybody should be. As soon as we get into identification around that, whether about ourselves and others, we create that separation. So we end up judging ourselves. We end up judging our others. I'm good. You're not. You should do this. You're not doing that. You should be punished. It ends up creating that whole dynamic. I'm not good enough. I should be better. So that identification is not what we're talking about, back to the intention of, for my welfare, welfare of others, leading to peace. My welfare is not to blame myself and others. So, yeah, a lot of harm has been caused by that type of saying. It's, identification of I should, you should, or else type of thing. So I want to move into the next area of generosity. So sila and generosity, these are the first two of the paramis, these perfections, which kind of really support our practice. So generosity, it's an open-heartedness. And often what generosity has to do with, we have a boundary of protection around ourselves. And generosity is a loosening of that boundary, a way that we can open up and allow us to be affected by others, allow it to come in, allow things that we have to flow out. This requires being aware of others. Now, this is where I want to bring a little caution again. Again, I'm white privileged male. Some people may have different boundaries around the degree in which they can open up and be generous and allow others in. So there's different ways of being generous. There's generosity around time. I'm willing to spend time. I'm willing to help out. I'm willing to give attention. I'm willing to listen. Material goods. You need this, huh? Yeah, I got a cup of sugar. I can help you out here. Give people the benefit of the doubt. That's a giving. We have our doubts about this, but give the people the benefit of the doubt. So generosity is a gesture of connection. And now again, we're back to that tiny blue dot of Earth. We're recognizing that connection rather than the separation. And the gesture of generosity, if it's like material goods, the object itself isn't all that important. The important component of generosity has to do with being this gesture of connection. This, you and I, you and me, somehow there's a bond, somehow there's a mutual support. There's an organization called Facing Homelessness, and it's housed in the basement of University Friends meeting, where Sims's future home is. And Facing Homelessness is an organization which tries to connect with homelessness and supports them. And they have what's called a kindness window, in which homeless folks can come up, and if they need socks or little small material goods, they're given. But even more than the exchange of materials is having that point in which a person who's without a roof over their heads can come up and connect to another human being. Facing Homelessness has this phrase that they use, a bumper sticker even. They say, just say hello. Just say hello. I understand one of the most difficult aspects of being homeless is that you're not feeling connected. You're feeling isolated. You're feeling ignored. And just a gesture of saying hello can mean a lot. Yeah, we're here together. Just say hello. So, letting go of boundaries. Mindfulness helps recognize the way we're holding. Discernment, wisdom about whether a boundary is helpful or not, or needed. We can recognize the way we're generous or not. We can see a difference. In some circumstances, we might feel quite open-hearted. It's easy to be generous. towards a baby, towards somebody that's not in any way threatening. It can be more difficult to be generous towards someone who, you know, living on the streets, who might look a bit disheveled, might not even smell that good. We hold back. Recognizing how we hold back is worth knowing. And so we can say, okay, can I open up here? And again, we all have different circumstances and needs for protection. But at least recognizing, can I say hello? Can I smile? Can I see somebody in the grocery store and say hello? Can I help my neighbor? Taking a chance, having an intention, living a life, open-hearted, for my welfare, welfare of all beings, and leading to peace. I'll let it go with that. Thank you for your attention. Let's just sit for just maybe half a minute here. In other words, to be heard. Considering, how do we want to live our lives? What is the top tier of our intentions we want to use for framing how we walk through our lives? What leads to peace for all beings? So, thank you. Hopefully that's helpful. If not, okay. The other things today you'll find helpful. And so let's, you know, this boundary thing is a cool territory. Initially, Sue's hung, you know, signed up for this one. I would like to jump in here if I could. So, it was a fun challenge to kind of explore this territory. So let's, this time we break into small groups, set up the groups, and you're welcome to hang out, in the room, and not if you want to move on and call it, head out the rest of your day. Feel free to go out right now. And people who are left behind, I'll set up in groups of three. And I notice there's a couple of couples here, so I'll try to work around that. I see, I'm seeing the thank yous from everybody. Let me just acknowledge that, from Julie and Emily, thank yous, and Vanessa, Carrie, Susan. Anyway, good to be here in gathering in Sangha. So I'm going to break up into groups and let's talk about, what boundaries, are helpful. Let's talk about the sila and generosity. In a way that you feel resonates with you this morning. How have you held back? Or how do you notice that you hold back? Or how do you notice maybe that you get lost in other priority rather than your best intentions? And we'll have about 10, 15 minutes. I got to figure it out afterwards. So Let's see. So groups of three, breakout rooms. Welcome back. You guys are so quick in running back to the room. I don't know. Amazing technology. All right. Yeah, it's just time to discuss. And I see Lauren, his hand went right up. And so you can try that or raise your hand. Maybe I'll recognize it. Yeah, Lauren, unmute yourself. Feel free to do that. Lauren?
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, Jerry, thank you so much. We really enjoyed talking about a number of aspects that you brought up, and we commented that each of us had things to think about that we hadn't really thought about regarding boundaries. But we ended with the kind of idea of saying hello is where what I was talking about and the end and how I really can see myself creating that just boundary of silence or not looking at someone. And then the times when I break through that and just say, well, I'm just, I'll say hello or I'll establish a relationship with like someone who's selling real change. It just makes such a difference. And I feel like, yeah, just to make a connection like that. And that's the generosity. And we were thinking, you think of generosity in terms of your time and you think of it in terms of offering material things, but you don't always realize the generosity in an attitude or listening or speaking, like the attitude also, I really liked the way you said of giving people the benefit of the doubt. That's a generosity too. So anyway, thank you for giving us so much to think about.
Just Ajahn Sucito, a gesture of connection. It's how many ways?
Yeah.
Others? I like the that holding back. I did this compassion cultivation training a number of years ago, and one thing that they talked about was how do we hold back from certain people and open up to others? And noticing that, oh, okay, the person is kind of disheveled. I pull back, maybe rightfully so. And if it's a cute little puppy, oh yeah, I'll say hi to a cute little puppy. It's recognizing our barriers is the first step. And then we have a choice. We don't just have to act out of the conditioning. We act out of mindfulness and caring for ourselves and others. Yeah, Charlotte.
Yeah, that reminds me of using the boundary of not pushing people's buttons. I go to dinner with four people at every evening. They're a joy to be with, but there are one or two of them who are a little conservative or think differently than me. So I've learned what is pleasurable for them and what is a little hard. So I have made an effort to respect their boundary of not pushing, not saying things that would be aggravating. Because what friendship is that to make things uncomfortable for people? Anyway, that's my thought. Thank you.
Thanks, Charlotte. I imagine that takes effort, takes mindfulness. And I, as you're thinking, talking there, it brings to mind that idea of spontaneity. Oh, I want to be spontaneous. Yeah, I like being spontaneous sometimes, but spontaneity allows you to say any type of bullshit to somebody, Who cares? Nice to have mindfulness play in social interactions. Okay, other folks. Yeah, Charlotte, you still have your hand up? It's okay.
I wanted to follow up on what Charlotte was just saying, because I think that's so good. I'm so grateful that you brought it up, because finding out what other people's boundaries are is a sensitive process, because most of the time people don't tell you. You find out by stepping, putting your foot in your mouth, or, you know, or all of a sudden getting the cold shoulder, or whatever, you know. And so thank you, Charlotte, for bringing that up, because I think, anyway, that was it.
Well, sometimes it's just microexpressions that tell you. And if you're sensitive to microexpressions, they'll tell you a lot.
And if you want
to continue this conversation, if you don't take their response personally, you know, and don't like over-identify with it, then you can actually investigate, be sensitive. Anyway, so thank you again. Sorry.
It's not a scramble to raise hands, so if you feel like just unmuting and saying something.
I have my hand up.
Oh, okay, Harv, go for it.
When you were talking about Sila, I was thinking also that, so the morality and the ethics and all of that, there is a choice. I think it often helps for me to check in with myself. There are times when I'm feeling implicitly generous, implicitly expanded, open. And I know that I can trust myself more. Like, I can trust a little bit of spontaneity more if I know where I'm coming from in a given moment, you know, and I can maybe even take what you might think of as a risk in saying something, if I know that the place I'm coming from isn't sort of a smallness where I want someone to understand something, or I think I'm right, and I want them to know that I'm right. You know, that's where I might come from if I'm in a contracted place, or sort of, you know, a more egoic state. And so when I know I'm in an expanded state, I can be a little bit more spontaneous, is my sense, a little bit. I can trust myself with that. And it's particularly when I recognize that I'm in a smaller place that Sila is a real comfort. You know, it's where I can say, okay, this is a moment where either I'm not sure where I'm coming from, or I know I'm coming from maybe a smaller place or a place that is a little bit self-centered. And then it's a wonderful backstop, is how it feels to me. It feels like, okay, I have these intentions, I have these morals, I have these ethics, I want to do no harm. So what can I backstop on? You know, and not be spontaneous in those moments, so that I know I'm not going to cause harm sort of unintentionally. So I love that there's this sort of choice in it, and that also kind of seems to prevent it from becoming an identity, you know, because it's a little bit more fluid, it's a little bit more litigated in each moment. How much to be spontaneous, how much to sort of backstop on these ethics. I don't know what you think of that, or if that's the right way of thinking about this.
Yeah, if that's working for you, I think that's great. It's a personal process, you know, how we relate to this, we hold something as a support in our practice and relating to one another. Just having that pause, you have that choice of, you know, how spontaneous, whether you're spontaneous or not. As you talk about spontaneity, I remember one time, I guess I feel spontaneous in conversation, you know, most often when I'm full of myself or I'm judging somebody harshly. You know, I remember somebody talking about, you know, how much she loved the fur coat. And I had a hard time not being spontaneous. And ultimately, the spontaneous leaked forth pretty powerfully. So, So yeah, it's not always helpful, and it's also that spontaneity can be something that it's my ideas are so important. You know, I gotta, you know, I, this, you know, it can be self, it can be a lot of selfing, personally, I could say, you know, not being spontaneous. And, you know, it's, you know, I think there's value, you know, kind of relaxing and letting go and not being too uptight about this practice. And, you know, it's a balancing act. You don't want to get that, I'm afraid to act here, you know, either.
And hearing you say that, Jerry, makes me think that this whole boundary setting thing is a very dynamic process. We can't do it in isolation. So I liked the way your story sort of highlighted that.
Thank you. I think I'll let it go with that. We're running out of time. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Arf.